The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday in the first full day of spring, Gary, how are you?
Oh, yeah, and it's going to be a little warmer today.
Yeah, we actually are getting warmer weather here where we are.
Yeah. I didn't even know when you said that. I went, what day is it?
Yeah. Spring arrived officially several hours ago. I felt it. I knew it.
All right, I'm doing my last minute checking here because when I woke up, I was analyzing everything that went on yesterday. And okay, I don't see anybody saying this because this is the one thing that got me. And I thought about it yesterday when I saw that Bob Costello, you know, from that famous comedy group, was Abbott. Okay, the former legal aide to Michael Cohen. Mm. And I saw yesterday that he was testifying and he had called Cohen a liar. And even on the air yesterday, I was like, I don't understand this. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And then going through all of yesterday, I'm like, wait a minute, this makes no sense. And I didn't see anybody analyze it this way because it hit me probably during the middle of yesterday's show and I was just going through and reading something. I go, I'm not reading this right. Something's wrong. I didn't trust what I was reading. I went, this can't be true because Bob Costello testified yesterday before the grand jury and we know what he said. It's out there. That Michael Cohen is a liar. We know he's a liar. He's lied before. You know, he's a criminal, and nobody should believe him. And he testified that way, and he came out, he said, you know, Bragg doesn't seem like he's looking for the truth and all that. But my question was not any of that. My question was, why did Bragg call him? Is Bragg's intent still to prosecute Trump? That would be the... And I saw nobody hit this yesterday, and it's simply, you're in a grand jury. The only side you hear is the prosecution. Why would one of the last witnesses, because apparently there's another witness on Wednesday. I saw that. So he wasn't... I saw, you know, that he was the last witness, but as, you know, as of beginning yesterday, we thought he was the last witness, that it was going to be on Monday.
Okay, that's what wasn't clear, whether or not they moved his testimony up or he actually isn't the last witness, and there's one more coming on Wednesday.
Yeah, I saw one more on Wednesday.
Okay, all right.
I read that. Now, that may not be true. I don't know, but I had read that in it was either Wall Street Journal, National Review, Fox, or one of the other many publications that I've been going through over the last half hour or so. But my point is, after it's out there that you know you are most likely to prosecute, and it's part of – why would you – put out, you know, why would you even call a Costello? Because he went through the entire thing. He said, look, when I knew Michael Cohen was testifying and what Michael Cohen was saying he was going to say, I knew he was lying, and I called the DA. And I told the DA this is all, you know, a bunch of hogwash. Trump, he said, did not know about the payments at all. Now, this comes from the legal advisor to Cohen. So you're looking at this saying, well, why did Bragg call him? Because your goal, if you're going to indict a ham sandwich,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't bring in
a vegan.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't, maybe you bring in a vegan. I like you don't that. Bring a you don't bring you know, in a meat eater. If,
right.
Yeah. You bring in all the vegans, not the meat eaters.
And so when you have Costello coming in and saying, as one of the last witnesses,
yeah.
what are you doing? This guy's lying. Mm-hmm. Trump didn't know anything about it. That doesn't make any sense why Bragg would do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean
it does. I mean that it doesn't, and nobody. I didn't see. Now maybe somebody did. I went through to see. Just went through the quick outline of the different news shows last night that I might have missed in prime time. Mm-hmm. And I don't see where anybody has addressed this. And it was so clear. And I read so many articles yesterday talking about Costello. And I went, well, wait a minute. Why would Bragg call him? This is a grand jury. It's not the regular trial. Only the prosecution gets to make their case. Why would you bring in somebody? And then Costello was on the courthouse steps saying, this guy's a liar, this guy's a liar, this guy's a liar. Everybody knows he's a liar.
Well, it says here from ABC 7 in New York, in a news conference after his grand jury appearance, he told reporters that he had come forward to provide exculpatory information about Trump and to make clear that he did not believe Cohen, who pleaded guilty to federal right. crimes and served time in prison, he did not believe Cohen could be trusted. And so my question is, all right, then he came forward based on what? You can't do you just get to walk into the grand jury
no,
and say,
no.
hey, no. I'm here. Let no. me speak.
No. The DA.
Then how did that happen?
The DA called him in. Bragg called. You don't just get to say, I want to testify in a grand jury. The DA has to call you in. And that's what doesn't make, you know, you don't get to do there is no defense. The defense doesn't get to bring in exculpatory evidence. It's a grand jury. The prosecution mm-hmm. runs that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how that happened in the process. I'm not sure.
Well, he had to call him in. So my question is, why would Bragg do that? Why would Bragg shoot his case in the foot in the media and inside the grand jury if he really wanted to indict, unless he wanted this publicly so he, in a couple of days, could say, well, you know, a lot of the members of the grand jury wish to indict but when it came down to it, we realized that our witness, you know, Michael Cohen, which has to be the key witness. Well, he was the key witness until mm-hmm. Costello came in.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense why you would call him in. Of course, Costello came forward to give exculpatory evidence to basically say, you know, this guy's a liar, but Bragg doesn't have to allow him in. I don't understand, you know, it makes me wonder now, is Bragg, because when you see yesterday, you say, well, this case is a complete mess.
Well, I
mean, before Costello ever came in, everybody, even on MSNBC yesterday, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. on Morning Joe, they were talking about the fact this is an extremely weak case. Everybody knows it's a horribly weak case. Did somebody get to Bragg and say, look, you can't do this? Did some Democrat come to Bragg and, you know, you and I were talking about the possibilities beforehand. Somebody get to Bragg and from the Democrats and say, look, we have stronger cases. If you go ahead with this, you're going to lose.
It's going to be nothing but a circus, and you're going to lose.
You're going to lose,
and you're going to give Trump leverage, and we don't want that.
Well, you and the other cases that we believe are stronger, that this would be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, in the Department of Justice. I don't know who. I mean, again, from what I've read, the case for against Trump in Georgia is stronger, but still weak. And the problem with Mar-a-Lago is the fact that if you file that against Trump, well, then you will face the same thing here, that it's political because you didn't go after Biden.
Yeah,
and you know, for Biden, for his you know, top secrets and classified information everywhere. So, but still, that's what I would think. Somebody would say, look, if you do this, you're going to lose. Costello was so strong. So how do you blow up your own investigation or you bring in somebody like Costello who says your key witness is a liar. And he testified under oath. Trump didn't know any money was exchanged.
Yeah. Under New York law, a person who prosecutors expect to indict can request that a witness appear on his or her behalf.
Who?
So Trump can, Trump's team can request that somebody appear before the grand jury under New York law. Yes.
Did Trump request that?
Must have.
Yeah, I've never seen any news item on that.
His lawyers must have done that. So,
then why did it leak?
Well, Costello came out and did the press conference after his testimony.
Well, yeah, but he's not supposed to. He didn't talk about what he said there. He just called Michael Cohen a liar.
Right.
From what I saw.
Right.
How did it leak?
I don't know.
Because to me, the case totally blew up in the public yesterday with Costello testifying.
Right. Well, no, I think it was a huge, huge blow to the case.
Well,
that was already weak to begin with.
Well, and Costello said he went forward. He didn't say, I went forward because the Trump lawyers told me to go forward.
Well, but he may have been implying that he agreed to come forward, that he was good with coming forward.
But he didn't agree. He wanted to come forward.
Well, that's how it has to happen.
Right.
It had to have been at the request of the Trump defense team.
Well, he went what he said is he went to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to them, he told them, you know, he said, this is the way it is and it's a lie and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said he can testify, but he'd only testify if Cohen would allow him to.
Mm-hmm.
Because of attorney-client privilege. He was his legal advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, he said, I got the approval to do so, which means Cohen had to agree to it. None of this makes any sense.
No. But
because Cohen,
I started with the question in our pre-show meeting.
He wasn't going to testify unless he got the approval that attorney-client privilege was taken out of it. You know, that didn't become a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
But he called them and told them that Cohen is lying. And
yeah,
then he said he got approval to do so.
Any of that information on that item fall under attorney-client privilege? The information on the payments.
Since Cohen already released
all that information.
He thought it did. Costello did.
Yeah, I don't know. But the question that I started with in our pre-show meeting, does Bragg believe, or has he been asked to basically stand down? Don't go forward with an indictment. And I guess we'll find out soon enough. It's certainly not going to happen today, Tuesday.
No, I saw next week.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find where I was reading it before.
Look, we tore it down on yesterday's show that Cohen's a horrible witness. I don't know why in the world that would be your key witness. But if you've got nothing else and you're someone like Bragg who's intent on, you know, indicting a ham sandwich here, then, yeah, you use whoever you got.
As Cohen said, he testified to the grand jury. Remember that, under oath Monday, that Trump did not know about the payments by Cohen to Stormy Daniels.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's just, it's bizarre.
Mm.
I want to find out where he said, I read that earlier. I got to find out where
I saw
that about where he said I went, that Costello went to the DA and said,
right,
you know, this is, he's a liar, he's a liar, he's a liar. And so it was proactive on his. I didn't see where he said that he did that on behalf of the Trump lawyers, which is, again, it's all interesting. And I just wish I could get, because I look, I'm not a legal mind, but I, you know, I, that's not what I do, but I would like
the,
to.
The final decision to hear the witness rests with the grand jury, so not the prosecutor, then, according to New York state law. They, the grand jury, could have turned him away, Costello.
Oh, okay.
They did not. So, you know, when you break that down, it really comes down to whether or not the grand jury believes Costello, or whether or not they're fully on politically motivated, you know, terms with this endeavor.
Here's, in the grand jury. Okay, I found it here. I called them after I saw Michael Cohen on TV stating things that said he was going to tell the grand jury that were contrary to what he told us when we first represented him in April of 2018. So I'm sitting at home watching these lies, and I've said, I've got to do something about it. I don't represent Donald Trump, but I do stand for justice, and I think I have a legal obligation to inform both sides. When the U.S. Attorney's Office phoned Cohen to talk about his time representing Cohen, he asked if they had documentation of Cohen waiving his attorney-client privilege. And they said, you presume correctly. I said, fine, send it over. I'd be delighted to talk to you. That waiver is very clear. And once we had that, I prepared 330 emails, a bunch of text messages, Costello said, adding that he also provided documents related to an interview from then Democratic-led House committee investigators, whom he said he included, current Representative Daniel Goldman, then the director of investigations with Adam Schiff. He said he then sent that same documentation to Trump's legal team and Bragg's office, adding that he further requested to meet with the Democrat personally. That was back then, though.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. So, I mean, this was him, you know, on the, you know.
But technically, I mean, you can, I could see Trump's team just
maybe that happened.
Putting the, because if he contacted them with the same documents earlier, then, and then he said, hey, I'm willing to testify on your behalf, all they have to do is put that request. And then if the grand jury says, okay.
All right. Well, let's say that's the case. Let's say all those things happen in the Trump lawyers, because I look at it and go, well, then Bragg's case blew up yesterday.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear anybody.
Costello,
and I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that in the media.
Right.
Well, because of all this, his case is garbage now. If it was garbage before, it's total
worse.
Garbage now.
What little you had,
right,
is now ashes.
And I didn't see that angle yesterday. That Costello's testimony destroyed Bragg's case completely.
I guess it's, you know, we won't know until we find out the impact on the grand jury.
866-90 Red Eye.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Have your wheel alignment checked to set you up for a safer and smoother ride. Driving with incorrect wheel alignment can result in reduced performance, tread wear, and steering issues. While you're at it, make sure your tires are properly inflated based on the load you're hauling. Underinflated tires can impact your fuel economy and result in blowouts. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com. and use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letter CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hardy, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You look at this here, some of the stuff from Costello, the former legal aide, to Cohen. He claims he once met with an emotionally distraught Cohen who alleges he said, "I swear to God, Bob, I don't have anything on Donald Trump." Costello said his client continued acting incredibly distraught and purportedly said, "I will do whatever I have to do. I will never spend one day in jail." Now what he's saying is, "I lie, cheat, and steal, shoot somebody. I will not spend a day in jail," he told Tucker Carlson. Do you think a guy who is whose mentality is that is not going to admit that he has information on Donald Trump? But having said that, the DA's office didn't ask me questions to bring that up. I brought it up anyway. I ignored their questions and simply gave them information.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, you just look at all this and you say, if he said that inside that room, did he not destroy Bragg's case? If what we're being told is Bragg's case, is Bragg's case.
Right, yeah.
So good, you know you want to listen again with our podcast, available on our app and at redeyeradioshow.com.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday was asked the question by a reporter about the Donald Trump situation.
We wanted to know what your thoughts are on the rumored Trump indictment, and if you have any role in it. If charges are brought on him, will you have any role in extradition to New York?
I've seen rumors swirl. I have not seen any facts yet, and so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros-funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros-funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe. And so you're talking about this situation with, and look, I don't know what goes into paying hush money to a porn star to secure silence over some type of alleged affair. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is that if you have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments, you know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office.
And you heard the laughter when he said, "I don't know what it goes into paying hush money to a porn star for an alleged affair." You could hear the laughter. He didn't crack a smile at all. He kept deadpan in that. But if you want to know when the first attack from the unofficial DeSantis campaign went after Donald Trump, that was it. even though he went after Bragg, and it was interesting to read some of the commentary. And it's, I guess it's true. He went after Bragg and he went after Trump at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, the Trump was not, he just went, he was not happy. And neither was his family for DeSantis's, comments, even though technically correct, politically, it was the first bomb thrown by the unofficial DeSantis campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to watch that southpaw, you know. It's just when you're watching one hand, then all of a sudden, boom. But, you know, it will be interesting to see how it does pan out, because it's everybody sees Bragg's cases for what it is. It's garbage. And then you add the Costello testimony to the grand jury from Monday, and it's garbage that's been burned down to nothing. And I guess we'll see where it goes. By the way, it sounds like Ron DeSantis is running. If anybody has any questions, don't know why you would take a jab otherwise. But, yeah, I think that it's something that maybe DeSantis knows, like a lot of people know. And who knows? My question was, is Bragg being told by other Democrats that if you go forward with this in this particular indictment, then you give a lot of leverage to him? And look what the raid on Mar-a-Lago, you know, the fundraising in the 2 weeks after that, was huge for Trump. If that happened, you know, with the indictment from Bragg, then you can expect that it's going to leverage him, and everybody knows that. But I still have to wonder if Bragg's been told, if he's being encouraged by Democrats, don't go down this road. You got a weak case. It's going to fall apart. You're going to make everybody look bad.
Well, you think about it, because, again, a grand jury is not a, you know, is not the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit there and you bring in good lawyers. You can sit there and you can pound on Michael Cohen in cross-examination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just absolutely pound him. And Costello came forward, you know, he doesn't need to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in it on him.
Yeah, he gets nothing.
Either way, I mean, there's nothing, you know, there's no advantage for him to come forward except extreme criticism. Now, the interesting thing is, and maybe there will be some criticism from Costello, but normally, knowing that he was going to testify, you would expect that would appear. And I didn't see any, except from Cohen.
Oh, an attack on Costello, I mean.
Yeah. Attack on Costello. Now, yeah. Cohen did.
Yeah.
Cohen said, no, yeah, he's well, lying.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you look at who doesn't have credibility, and Michael Cohen does not have credibility. And do you really, you know, I'm not in the law profession, but after yesterday, because, I don't know what, none of us know yet what Bragg has. It's just, look, this is the case. This is all he can have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there isn't going to be, because of the Stormy Daniels case, probably, that this is the evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians and it's treason, and so we're going after Trump for treason. The charges are limited based on the events that we know of what he is looking at, which is Stormy Daniels. And that's why they say, well, this is the only thing that's out there, which is why you've got so many analysts predicting what Bragg is looking at. Well, Cohen is your strongest witness. Cohen is the guy. And you've got somebody who comes forward as legal aid and presses and said, I want it. Now, what would be interesting is he said Bragg was not interested in what he had to say, but he told them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, the grand jury had to agree to hear him.
Well, this is the whole case. Is this like a court of, is this, I don't, it's not, the, well, we know it's not a court of law. in a grand jury proceeding in New York? If the prosecutors, can you just say yes or no answers, or can the grand jury say, we want to hear more?
No, I think the grand jury can say, we want to hear more.
No, they, tell us what you think.
No, they're that's exactly how, you know, it's if the grand jury can turn Costello away, then certainly they have the power to say, no, we want to hear everything he has to say. Which is interesting because it makes you wonder if the grand jury's looking at this and saying, yeah, this is weak, or maybe not. Maybe they were fully on board and, oh, man, this looks bad on Trump. And then all of a sudden, wait a minute, we've got somebody here who can counter everything that Cohen is saying, and it's somebody who was on, who was at that time on the inside.
This is so bizarre because in my mind, I keep thinking, I'm missing something here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bragg can't be bringing this forward. There has to be something that we're missing. And maybe we're not. But it's just, for me, it is so weak. And after yesterday, and even 2 days ago when I saw what Bragg was going to, you know, what he claimed he was going to say, mm-hmm. I went, well, this is really bad. And then after, you know, his press conference yesterday, and then being on, you know, Tucker Carlson and, you know, laying it out, you know, here's what's going on. You're like, wow, this is really the public relations on this, I don't know what it's inside the grand jury room, but the public relations on this, when MSNBC comes out, you know, on Morning Joe yesterday, even before we knew of the Costello testimony, and they were stating, oh, this is really weak. Yeah, this is really weak. This is really weak. This is really mm-hmm. weak. Mm-hmm. And we said across the board, you don't see really any, except for the early response from Democrats, which was, no one's above the law. Okay, well, what are the actual legal aspects of the case? Once you get to the legal aspects of the case, there's nobody out there saying this is a strong case. Nobody.
No.
Everybody's
no.
like, what is he really doing? And then after Costello yesterday, I'm thinking, why am I thinking that the whole thing has just blown to pieces and nobody else out there is saying it? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm missing something here. What am I missing? I've had that thought for the last 48 hours almost, and it keeps growing, you know, stronger and stronger. What am I missing here? What is everybody missing here? Because it just doesn't make any sense. The case is so damn weak.
Well, what is it that would, what event keeps it within the statute of limitations?
That's another great question. I don't know.
Because there had to be something that, some action by Trump himself within the last 5 years on the federal crime and 2 years on the New York State crime.
And this would have happened in 2016, so 2021.
Right. Would be the, would on be, the federal crime, would,
federal
be the,
crime right.
would be the run out on that. And so what would have happened, it would have happened, had to have happened sometime by the end of 2018 to qualify
right.
still under the federal
right.
statute of limitation.
And was Trump talking to did Trump talk to Cohen, and then they said that's a continuation of a conspiracy, even though there's no conspiracy charge from what we know?
Would any, or is Bragg interpreting something? I mean, everything is such a stretch here. Is he interpreting one piece of communication as a continuation of said crime? Or is Bragg interpreting the fact that, well, wait a minute, on the federal elections crime, then he is, and he ran for re-election in 2020, it applies to 2020 election cycle. So therefore, the statute is 2025 before it runs out.
I don't think he can win that, but it's interesting. I mean,
if that he's was trying great. To say, because yeah, what is the whole case on the whole Stormy Daniels thing? That it was essentially something that must be reported as a benefit, an expenditure of the campaign itself.
So if it applied to 2016,
then it must
that benefit
apply
also
to his
applies
re-election.
To 2020. That's interesting. I mean, I laughed because it was, you did some thinking there.
Well, because if they're saying that that benefit was to make sure that he got elected, that it wasn't personal in nature, that it was about him getting elected, then it had to apply to him getting reelected.
Then why wouldn't the misdemeanor apply it by that same cause, and you go with the misdemeanor and you get him on the misdemeanor?
Well, that's, you mean the state crime?
The state, the yeah, the initial state crime, the misdemeanor, they're both state crimes. The first one, the second degree, is the misdemeanor. The first degree is when you combine it with the federal crime. Because the state crime is either second degree or first degree is business fraud.
Right.
And but the first degree is based on the fact that you did it in order to, your intent was to do that to break another law, which is the federal campaign finance law, which gets you to the felony.
Well, and both, if you applied my theory there that it applied to the second election cycle, then your time would have been up November of 2022.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
So okay, that would have been the end of that statute.
I like the way you think.
Well, I mean, which means it's over, which means that crime right, doesn't qualify.
Right. So it would still have to be the felony.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the fact that Trump has announced for 2024, would that continue?
Was it? Hold on a second. And he announced, when did he announce? Yes. November 15th.
Yes.
Which would still be outside that 2 years.
Okay, be outside. But, be outside.
Yeah. But would it be renewed at that point because it applied to the new election? No, probably not. But listen, we're not the ones that are stretching here. Ask Bragg what the rules are. What the hell do I know?
Yeah, then it's good though. I like that thought process. Yeah. I do like it. I mean, yeah.
It's the only thing I can see.
Some lawyers going, that was good. 866-90 Red Eye.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Hey, that high school football coach that was fired for brain after games, given a $2 million settlement.
Wow.
And reinstated back as coach.
All right.
Oh, we'll get to that story. We touched on this yesterday, but more stories out yesterday also about Newsom in California under pressure to take executive action on reparations.
Right. What's taking him so long? What is taking him so long? And what about the lawmakers there in California, the state lawmakers? Why aren't you getting it done?
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you wish. We're going to move on to something else, but it was just interesting here because we were in the first hour discussing the DA's, the district attorney of New York, Bragg, and the alleged pending indictment coming up on Trump. And we just really over the last 48 hours, you know, it's when the Costello situation came up, And he was the legal aide or the legal advisor to Michael Cohen, who has come forward and said Trump didn't know. Trump did not know about the money. And you were just telling me some of the other things that he had said that Cohen actually told him that Trump didn't know.
Yeah, and this from NBC News. Costello told reporters that when he spoke to Cohen in 2018, Cohen said that he'd made the payments on his own, that Cohen made the payments on his own, and that it was his idea, not Trump's. The quote from Costello to the media, quote, Michael Cohen did this on his own, end quote. I said, also in quotations, I said, why would you do that? Because I wanted to keep this a secret. Cohen basically saying that to Costello. I wanted to keep this a secret, even secret from my own wife. I didn't want Melania Trump to know. I didn't want my wife to know. Again, that's according to Costello. And also the allegation that he took a loan out on his home to pay the $130,000.
And then billed Trump.
And then he billed Trump and basically, you know, built it as monthly installments, which is how you build a retainer. So, or build or maintain a retainer. And so that's the claim by Costello.
Wow.
Is that Trump didn't know. I wondered this from the beginning.
Yes,
is it possible that the payoff happened of $130,000? Here's a guy who's worth billions. Now, his net worth varies depending on who you ask, but he's worth billions, $130,000. While it's a lot of money, even for a guy like that, it's not as much as it is for the rest of us. And so if you look at that, then, I mean, even his own lawyer, according to these allegations here, had to get a mortgage on his home in order to pay that directly to Stormy Daniels, the $130,000. Well, all right. I've got a lot of questions, but if Costello is being truthful, number one, the question would be, why would he come forward? Now, he has represented Giuliani and Steve Bannon. You could say this guy is squarely in Trump's corner.
Mm-hmm.
You could also say that, and he did say something to the media to the extent of something like, well, look, if they've got something on the guy, then they've got something, right, on Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's one thing, you know. But Cohen isn't being truthful is his claim. So why would Costello come forward? Well, he doesn't have anything to gain here. I mean, I guess you could argue, well, maybe he's going to be, you know, maybe there's
rewarded
promise
later on. Yeah,
maybe there's a promise that he could be hired by Trump, you know, down the road, whatever. So then you get into the okay, but you're going to risk everything based on this when you don't really have to do this. This case is already weak. If you're the Trump team, do you need this? Well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask his lawyers if they believe they need this to defeat Bragg. I don't believe they need Costello's testimony to defeat Bragg. I think it's a weak case to begin with. But I'm not the one with all of this in play. I'm not the one being targeted by Bragg yet. So the entire thing is now, as far as I know.
Yet. I won't let them take you from Texas,
well,
Eric.
Thank you. No extradition.
No extradition from Texas.
So
we will protect you.
Exactly. So, you know, then you ask yourself, why why would Costello, because he seemingly was proactive in this. From what we can piece together, he's the one that, you know, sees Cohen on TV and is like, no, no, no. He hears about Bragg's case. He sent some things, some documents that he thought were helpful, exculpatory in nature, and then also sent some documents to the Trump team. And then at some point, Trump's team reached out to the grand jury and requested that a witness be heard that could provide exculpatory evidence. And the grand jury in the state of New York, you get to do that if you're being targeted. But the grand jury has to agree to hear that. And they did, which is also interesting. Makes you wonder how much they believe in Bragg's case. But then, you know, so the question would be, based on everything we know that Cohen has already been charged with and the things that, you know, based on those charges that he has done, does Costello's testimony seem like out of the clear blue? No, not at all.
The other thing I thought was interesting was the fact that, remember, Costello said he went to them and they actually asked them. He asked the DA, do you have the evidence that, or the, do you have the papers that Michael Cohen waived attorney-client privilege? Because technically Costello was an attorney for him.
Right.
And they said yes. Now, Cohen is screaming that Costello shouldn't have been able to testify because of the attorney-client privilege with Cohen, and he's screaming that Cohen's screaming he didn't have it. He's held up the paper, and he has stated that the DA, you know, also under, you know, is under the clear understanding that there is no attorney-client privilege anymore because Cohen waived it. The DA seemed to agree with it because he was allowed to testify. Well, if Cohen is clearly lying about that, and you have, if you catch somebody in one lie, pertaining to the case you're talking about, and you've got the signed document there, as Costello says he does, you've just totally destroyed the credibility in a trial against, well, not just the trial, but even, I don't know if it came up in the grand jury, but in the trial you could use that to show that the witness, Cohen, is, if he lied about this, he'll lie about anything.
Yeah, in the capacity that he served with Cohen, Costello as an aide, he's a lawyer, but he's an aide. You're serving the client, and if the lead attorney waives attorney-client privilege between himself and the client, then does that not clear? I guess that clears Costello to testify openly. If the lead attorney is going to do that, because the privilege is not between Costello and Cohen, it is between Costello, the law firm, basically, and Trump. The lead attorney, Cohen, and Trump. That's where the privilege lies, and if that's waived, that's why Costello wanted to see that.
Right.
He wanted to know that that had been waived, so does he have the right, is he open to talk about it?
Okay.
Those items that were involved the client's case or cases. So
no, it's important to clarify where the attorney-client privilege is.
Right. So so I don't see, again, I don't see why Costello, I mean, again, the promise of some kind of, you know, future in the Trump organization or something. But aside from that, Is that enough for this kind of move when the case is weak already? I think this came in. I think he was, and I could be wrong because we don't know the makeup of the grand jury. We don't know what they're thinking. We don't know what they've seen and heard. But it really sounds like he came in with a flamethrower and torched what little of a case Bragg had to the ground. And that's what it seems like if you look at that, because, again, there is no other motive here for Costello to come in, because as far as I know, Costello has not been disbarred like Cohen. You know, Cohen, of course, gave all that up. But he would risk his entire law career if he were to come forward and lie to a grand jury.
Right.
I mean, he would risk everything.
And that's what it comes down to. It comes down to the credibility of witnesses, where Cohen has little credibility to begin with.
Because his...
And that's my whole point. If he's lying, right. if Costello's saying he's lying about attorney-client privilege, well, he's lying about that.
Right.
Well, that's, you know, that's key to the case that... And shows, okay, this guy will lie.
Right.
And so I just, like I said, the last 48 hours, I've been, there's this thing in my head saying, what am I missing? What am I missing? Because this seems just such a horrendous thing for any DA to bring forward. You just say, well, there's got to be something else.
Yeah.
Because you can't bring this forward. You can't bring it forward. Then I remember, well, they're on the crazy left. They do crazy things. But still, there's that one thing, that one part of my mind saying, there's got to be something missing because this is just so bizarre.
Right.
And not just what we're talking about here, but everything along this, you know, the entire case. That, well, okay, that so they're going to go after this as a low-level felony because he committed the business fraud in order to violate a federal law, which is a violation and a fine of a campaign finance law.
Mm-hmm.
But the FEC wouldn't fine Trump, or the FEC dropped the case and didn't call what Trump did, election financing.
Right. Right.
So you don't. So and even then, I just said, well, that doesn't make sense. Now, with everything on top of it, I'm still saying to myself, what does he have? Because none of this makes any sense at all from what we know right now. If what we know right now is what we know and it's the truth, if what we know is what we know, and it is what he has, this thing's going to blow up big time.
Yeah. It's a complete implosion.
He doesn't know that? Then again, as I said, this is the guy who said, what we're going to do to make people safer is the fact that I'm going to make sure that people who commit armed robbery, as long as they don't shoot the gun, well, then we won't charge them with a felony.
Right.
If they have the gun, fine. If they don't shoot the gun, we won't charge them with the felony.
Right.
I mean, that's how. Now, that's insanity to begin with when you think about it. What DA, think about this, any DA saying that 5 years ago?
Well, think about the couple who were both attorneys who stepped out on their porch with guns because violent protesters were coming into their neighborhood. You brandished a gun. How dare you? Oh, but if you go to New York City and use that in the commission of a robbery, then Bragg at one time was promoting, you shouldn't be charged with a felony.
Right.
You know, it is so clear here. I do wonder if Costello really changed everything here in the approach, because my question is, why did the grand jury agree to that? They seemed okay with hearing his testimony. They didn't seem okay. They had to have approved it. They can say, no, we don't want to hear it.
Which means they approved it.
Which means they wanted to hear it.
Yeah. Just.
And I wonder if Bragg is looking at this going, okay, everything that I just had is just down the drain because of Costello. A guy, why would you risk your entire career? Cohen doesn't have one.
No, he doesn't.
He can't be a lawyer again. He's done, and he's already been convicted. So he's really got nothing to lose. He's doing this out of spite. Costello has everything to lose, but he did it anyway.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Surviving and thriving as an owner-operator has just as much to do with managing costs as it does with generating revenue. Like the chief financial officer of any company, you have to be concerned about rising costs, especially without increases in revenue. Trying to reduce costs, let alone make sense of them, can be a complicated task. Understanding basic principles of operating costs can save you thousands of dollars a year. A penny saved could be $1,000 earned. Saving just one penny per mile over 100,000 miles driven annually will deliver $1,000 to the bottom line at the end of the year. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Problem is with this, now that the mainstream media understands that it's a weak case, I think, you know, one of the, you know, politically one of the things is the thought process now moves to Biden because the influence peddling thing, people now, this thing's just going to keep going stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and the evidence is bad. You know, and now everybody realizes when the president came out the other day and said, not true. It's like, well, yeah, you've already, your family's already admitted it's true.
Yeah.
Right. Hunter's already admitted it's true. And so when you see the things that are coming out, and it seems like every single day the Republicans are bringing out, okay, not only were there Chinese payments, but look at these Russian payments from the oligarchs, the only ones that weren't sanctioned by the Biden administration. You start tying those things together saying, why? You know, when it comes to China, does the president do this, 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 and this? Why with Russia and these oligarchs does he do this, 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 and this? And all you have to do politically, this isn't about the substance of it. I mean, the substance of it relates to the politics of it, but I'm just talking about the politics for a moment. That's why you can't win it. You can't win influence peddling.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
I mean, you have Schumer. I don't know why the Republicans are going after him. Well, the polls showed the American public understands why the Republicans are going after him.
Yeah.
Because there's a suspicion the family is dirty and Biden is dirty and has been taking, you know, been taking, you know, payments from foreign governments and entities related and tied to foreign totalitarian governments. And the American public doesn't like it. You can't win that one politically.
No, you can't.
Because you cannot. We now know the payments happened. And so the next question is very simple. Why? What did the Bidens do for that money? Or does China and the Russian oligarchs just like the Biden family, so they give them money for nothing?
Out of the goodness of their hearts.
Yes.
Consider yourself canceled if you don't listen nightly. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, latest poll. Latest media poll.
All right.
Gallup conducted a survey of Americans on their level of confidence in the trustworthiness and benevolence of the American media. Benevolence? What? The big takeaways from the study. Are that 23% of Americans believe most national news organizations care about the best interests of their readers, viewers, and listeners.
We're the station that cares.
50% feel most national news organizations intend to mislead, misinform, or persuade the public. It's interesting that you have 23% that believe most national news organizations care about the best interests of their readers, viewers, and listeners. Well, then again, that does make sense. Because if you put it, for example, if you're a conservative and like a particular conservative network, you're going to say, okay, I think they care about me because they're promoting my values.
Yeah, for a conservative, it may not be like on a personal level, but they care about the well-being, the values that I care about, which is, of course, directly relevant to the well-being of me. By the way, it's all about me.
Media trust continues to vary along predictable lines. Democrats express significantly more trust in news organizations than Republicans. Among Republicans, trust in news continues to decline. New data that more independents today report distrusting news than ever previously reported. Yet trust in local news organizations remains higher than trust in national news. Well, that's because it's closer to the people.
Yeah.
Local news is...
Yeah. You really have to get it right. And there's really not room for... Not that there isn't bias, but
right.
They don't have their own primetime opinionated shows and everything else. They have their, you know, news shows in the morning, and then they're, you know, if they still have a noon time, and then what, 5, 6, and 10?
That's, yeah.
They pretty much have to get everything in.
And when you think about it, you know, for example, when we've had the hail, you know, when you talk about news media and television media, you know, most likely that, you know, you're watching the, you know, the meteorologist and then the spotters out there.
At
that particular point, I mean, they're covering news.
Right, yeah.
They're covering news that concerns you immediately. So, yeah, you would sit there and say, yeah, they care about us because look at the guy standing out in the hail.
Right. Yeah.
And they care about us because they cover our local sports teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at the morning shows, you know, that are out there, whenever I turn it on, and that isn't often, but whenever I turn it on, it's weather and traffic. They do the news, but you're saying, okay, what's
breaking
the traffic?
News, weather and traffic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's the stories from overnight, and a lot of it does carry overnight, but there's so much that breaks, you know, early in the day, then they cover that. And I don't spend a lot of time in front of television, but when the weather is going on, I tune in to our flagship station, and then I also have local TV on. I want to see what's going on the radar and what's, you know, what they know. So, yeah. It is a different level of trust because they're doing something different. Not that there isn't bias, because over the years, I've seen a number of reporters who are clearly biased at the local level, but the question is, overall, as a news organization, are they doing the work they're supposed to be doing? Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of, well, do they care about me? Well, they care about reporting the news and the weather and the traffic. I mean,
right?
You know, I mean, they serve their viewers and or listeners in that respect.
In the things that immediately affect them, they're
right.
You know, it's you know, if you go to a national news network, the bias sometimes is so obvious on those national issues where you don't get the same thing normally locally.
Well, that's What I love doing, and you and I have talked about this, especially in recent years, is that you can go to the YouTube channels of local news stations all over the country and kind of get their reporting, their take on a story that could be a national story based in their town. I did that quite a bit and do that quite a bit for things like hurricanes in Florida or the Idaho murders, those things. You know, I thought, you know, I was very curious as to what was going on the ground, what the locals were seeing and saying, and what the local news stations were reporting and how they covered it. To me, that's always fascinating because of what we do. But also, I think, and I do this when I travel, I love to turn on the news and the local news and see, okay, what is it? Because they have to gauge what's important to their viewers. They have to gauge, you know, all right, I'm going to be in Louisville next week, and it's all going to be about, you know, college basketball, and then the start of the countdown to the Derby. But when I go to a town, I'm always curious. I tune in and see what's going on and how they're covering it. But now with so many stories out there, it's so easy because you can go to their YouTube channel and you can get their reports from their latest newscast and see, right, okay, what is, you know, what is their take on this? The train derailment was another one where you're getting more of a local take on it. We did this during the Jussie Smollett thing. You saw that the reporters there in the Chicago area, it was actually because, I think, of the work done locally,
yeah, you're right,
by those reporters,
yep,
that whole thing started to implode and the truth came out.
You know, I also think that when it comes to, you know, especially when talking about television news, you know, newspapers are having, you know, they're just having horrible troubles right now. So
yeah.
I don't know if when you talk about, you know, local news, whether most people are thinking newspaper anymore or whether it's more when they say local news, it might be television or it might be radio that they're looking at. But when you look at television news, for example, local television news, I think there's a little bit of a paranoia about the fact that, look, the national media can, you know, segment the audience. You know, they can do it from a national and still be profitable. We can't do that as a television station. And so what do? You cover the things that immediately affect people, which is the traffic, the weather, sports, and events that are going on around town. And from a more populist way, if you have a reporter out there that's an investigative reporter, and they're few and far between now, especially in the media, a lot of medium and small markets, they don't have them.
Right.
But if they do, then they investigate a lot of things from the, you know, we care about you and it's your dollar. You keep the politics out of it. You were trying to bring honesty to government and you bring it up that way. You're not getting on the air, for example, and say, today we're going to talk about Keynesian economics versus capitalism.
Yeah, right.
You know, And I will tell you this, I was, you know, looking at the local news, a lot of stories on what's going on. But I also think, because I also watched one thing where they brought on people to talk about, you know, to talk about the problem in Portland. It was one of like the local news shows. And there were three people that were on, one who did polling, another business person, and someone else that definitely represented, you know, more business interest and the pollster about where the public was, you know, when they were talking about what it needs to be done about Portland. Well, we need to bring business back. I mean, the answers were completely and totally generic. Nobody had the guts to say the homelessness problem and the crime problem sucks and we have to stop it.
Yeah.
And so you get into some of the programs there, and we're going to, you know, we're going to, and I noticed it, and I can't think of the name of the show in Portland, but it was like one of the public service ones. I forgot which station it was too, but I watched it the other day and I went, wow, that's completely useless. You know, they did say, well, the people, it was like 75% of people are afraid to go downtown Portland, you know, at night, 50% during the day, 75% at night. And they said that's a problem. But nowhere did they really focus and say the drug problem, the homelessness problem, the crime problem. We have to find a cure to that. In fact, right. The only guy that made any that made a specific thing of how to solve the problem, which wasn't gobbledygook, was we need to give incentives for business to come down. And he was the guy, he was the business guy that basically you need to subsidize businesses to come down here because they're not going to come down. But again, it's to the point where you're a local station. Can you sit there and say, hey, the left sucks here?
Yeah, right.
In Portland? No, you can't do it.
Right.
So you sort of, you cover these things, but you really don't truly cover them. That's what I got out of that program that I watched the other day. And it was on YouTube.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was from the last, it was like in the last month that they ran that. But everybody knows what it is. Everybody in Portland knows what it is.
Everybody's saying it until a camera is rolling.
Yeah. Well, the citizens will say it. It's when they bring the experts on.
Yeah.
Okay, who can't we offend?
Right.
Well, we can't offend liberals, so we have to just generically talk about we need to incentivize and bring people back and understand the culture said blah, 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 blah.
Walking on eggshells.
Yep.
Nobody is saying we need to cure this problem now.
Well, I'm sure Lars is on radio, but.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, and. But it's the same policy that is going to be in play for our lifetime. It's not. I'm convinced it's not going to change.
I'm talking about our friend Lars Larson.
Yes,
just so you know, at KXL, the affiliate that we're on in Portland. So and my old stomping grounds. I worked at KXL there.
Yeah,
but
it's not going to change. There's not going to be a political shift to the right in Portland. That's not going to happen. Not in our lifetime.
Which again, you know, and that's we've discussed that a lot. And we'll discuss it more, but that I mean, that's the problem. We've gotten to the point in this nation where liberalism has finally hit reality. That's what's happened across the board.
No, it is. It is
on every single major issue. Liberalism has come up against reality.
Spending, we see inflation, the broken border, the broken open border as they wanted, and we see the impact there.
Energy.
Spending, now to the extent
debt.
Now to the extent that you know you're seeing the pushback in on the whole EV thing.
The
activists are saying, well, no, we don't want EVs. We shouldn't be driving any cars because net zero is not zero. And then the cost of electricity, it's skyrocketing, and it's. You know, having to charge that car is becoming more and more and more expensive. All these things were things that we've talked about over the years that were bound to come true, and here we are.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, we're talking about the media in general. I was on YouTube and saw a YouTube clip, and I didn't watch the whole thing, and I'm going to have to go back and watch it now. And it was Jim Brewer, and it was the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it was him, you know, doing stand-up, and he just said, oh, man, the news. And he said, how many of you don't pay attention to the news anymore? And it was huge, the number of people that's, you know, big said, you know, we don't.
Yeah.
But when he said, well, things have been crazy in the news, and we started talking about the Chinese balloon, everybody, let's put it this way, they all say they're not paying attention to the news, but they all knew about the Chinese balloon.
Yeah.
And he was going in, I think I got a phone call or something, and he started going off on that. Do you ever see his COVID stuff?
Extremely, I've seen some of it, yeah.
Oh, I mean, extremely... Yeah, you know, extremely powerful that he does.
Yeah.
Except he still does look like he's always high. He just looks like he's a higher, older man now.
He was born looking like he had just smoked a bong.
Yeah. And he says that all the time in his stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I know. I was.
Yeah. No, he looks
what was
high.
It? What was the movie he was in, The Higher, when he was everybody was high?
And I don't remember the name of it, but yeah.
He said, yeah, you know, he understands. I goes, I know, I always look high. It's like,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
My natural state.
His eyes just naturally look that way.
Yes. But I'll have to watch the rest of it. But the majority of the audience at least want it to be known. We don't pay attention to the media, but.
Yeah, the viral stories they get.
Yes.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. When we were just talking about, you know, the end of last hour, I realized one of the narratives we started a little while back, and I can't remember exactly when we did, was the fact that, and we had mentioned it the last part of last hour, that we're now at a point where liberalism has come up against the reality of liberalism and liberal ideas have hit reality. And it's
the agenda is no longer in the abstract.
Right. And we've talked about this before where liberalism succeeded in the abstract. The world is going to end. Therefore, we need as a society to be on solar and wind completely. Oh, mm-hmm. It sounds great.
Yeah.
We won't think about the fact that it's impossible to do.
Right.
Until prices start going up and then people are concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look right now, because the small things in the context of history is, you know, the Trump indictment. I mean, it may go down in history because he'll be indicted as the first president. You know, if it happens, we've talked about what a poor case it is. It'll be huge in that way. But in the impact of where we're going as a society on the issues, I think the thing that is the strongest is the fact that and will be the bit that is the biggest enemy of Democrats and liberalism is the fact that all of their ideas have buttressed up right against reality. And you look at the border. Well, now people are feeling the effects of the border because of, you know, that migrants and illegal immigrants are all over the United States and being sent there. And all of a sudden, it's like affecting people. Debt. Nobody cared about the debt. We were fine being irresponsible of the liberal mindset that we can spend as much as we want and it's not going to have any effect. Frankly, I didn't expect it to hit so hard. It was predicted, but still, I was surprised how hard it hit inflation. The debt that we were involved in. Now, when you look at the fact of somebody contacted me yesterday and said, do you believe that the Fed policy to buy its own debt, you know, helped cause inflation? Well, yeah, because they had to manipulate the interest rates to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And still they couldn't sell all the debt. And so we started printing money. We weren't producing wealth. We weren't producing more durable goods and services. We were simply printing money to buy our own debt. Well, that with the interest rate, of course, that's going to have an inflation problem down the road. And now we, you know, see that as well as the spending. But now we see it. And how do we get out of it? Be interesting to see. Is it tomorrow where the Fed has a meeting? Is it tomorrow?
The meeting starts today, and then Wednesday will be the press conference. We won't hear anything until tomorrow afternoon.
But the thing that hurts, you know, and one of the reasons, because I brought up Trump before, one of the reasons that Democrats want to highlight Trump is because they believe that's the only thing that they have to win. And, you know, I don't think that's over the top rhetoric at all. It's the reality. They can't win on any issue, and they have a bumbling idiot as the leader of their party in Biden. Mm-hmm. And it's just the reality of where the Democrats are. But you look at it all across the board on every single major issue. Energy. Well, we can be solar and we can be wind. And now you see all the operators of grids across the country going, we can't do this. We can't do this.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous. You and I brought up the story the other day about EVs, about electricity prices now and inflation now deterring people from getting EVs and the belief that electricity is going to go up because of what the Democrats are doing. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. Well, so you're forcing us to have the electric vehicle, and then you're going to skyrocket it, and then we'll get to the point where California, where we can't produce electricity, and you'll tell us to turn off our cars. Hmm. And yeah. Those things are now, I mean, everything. I saw an article yesterday that EVs, when they get in a collision, they can't really repair the batteries and stuff, so they just total these electric vehicles if there's minor damage to cars.
Yeah, I saw that.
And, well, that's going to drive up insurance rates, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Drastically?
Yeah, that even a minor, what would up until now be considered a minor accident, could total the car.
People are now asking the question. We saw the polling the other day. Well, we've been being sold this global warming for 40 years now. Real, mm-hmm. real hard they've been pushing this, that the world's going to come to an end. They sent a child out to do their bidding. They were worshiping a child who knows nothing about science. And now, according to the polls, now people are saying, okay, now you're just manipulating it in order to try to control us. That was the interesting thing about that whole climate change, was a number of people that felt that they were being lied to and that the climate change movement was about power and control, mm-hmm. and not actually... And power and control means going after your money, and it wasn't actually about saving the world. Well, that's going to happen when they tell you 100 times that the world's going to end. And then the story came out, Greta had to pull her doomsday tweet that the world was ending this June. Well, how long can you do that before the public eventually wakes up? And when do they wake up? When it starts affecting them in the wallet or the pocketbook, and that's what's happening right now with inflation. You know, we've been sold a bill of goods, but we bought it. Oh, they sold us something that we shouldn't have bought, but you did buy it. And everything that we face today, every major issue that we face today, is because of the people that we here in the United States voted in to lead us.
Yeah.
And we didn't fight hard enough against what was going on. We knew this was going to happen. We knew it. When I was a talk show host in 89, we would bring these things up about where our society would go. Oh, you guys are just playing the old slippery slope. There's no slippery slope anymore, is there? Because we're there on so many of the issues.
Yeah, it's, you know, it all sounds great and noble in the abstract. Well, we'll just power the world off of the sun and the wind. That the border should be open, that everybody should come here and just live the American dream.
We face really interesting times right now, because if there's ever going to be change, this is when it's going to happen. When people's lives are actually affected by what government does. And I'm trying to think in my lifetime, you know, you think about the inflation that we had back in the 70s, and it was big, but now we have it, but we also have the ability of instant communications where people actually know. The media can't hide anything from the public anymore because of the internet, which again, you see that there's a recognition from Democrats and liberals that you can't hide the truth, which is why the Democrats and the liberals are trying to do what? Trying to censor the internet. Trying to censor social media because they can't hide it anymore. And one of the reasons they're going after Trump, because why would you spend any time on Trump? Why would you do that? Because you know you don't have anything else to sell the American public anymore. And hatred is always a great thing to sell. Except every single day when people feel the consequences of your political action. And that's what's happening today. And I don't know where it's going to end. I just know that it's happening slowly. You know, and these things change. There are things that happen that blew everybody away. You know, I remember the fall of the Berlin Wall. We were dumbfounded. We couldn't believe it happened so quickly. Mm-hmm. And again, there's no Berlin Wall here. But I'm not trying to relate us to a communist society at all. That's not my point. My point is societies can change quickly when you as an individual are affected by it each and every day. Will that turn happen? I believe it will. How fast? I don't know. But I don't know anything that changes people as quickly as, and we talked about this before, about a bad economy versus inflation. Inflation is worse than a bad economy based on the fact that we have high unemployment. Because in high unemployment, you may have, it may be terrible. 10 to 15% are laid off and it's horrible, but still 85% of the people that want to work are working. Inflation affects everybody who is working, and it's even worse because there's even a greater sense of hopelessness because you're working one job, you've taken another part-time job, and it's still eating into everything that you do. You want hopelessness? Hopelessness is when you're employed and you can't live the dreams or the goals that you have, and that's what's happening right now in the United States because of it. And the Democrats certainly don't have any solution for it, except, well, we should spend more money and bail everybody out, which created the problem to begin with.
I heard somebody talking the other day, and it was interesting in how they lined it out. That 5 years ago, she and her husband, and they're young, but they lined out their budget. And they were living within their budget. And now it's far outside their budget, and they haven't changed a thing. That every month they come up hundreds of dollars short. That's which, and she was talking about the extra work that he's doing, and, you know, what he's taken on some part-time work and weekend work and everything else. And so now it's about missing time with, you know, children. It's about missing time together with your family. It is taking, because what it sounded like, and it really came off as, you know, we did everything that we learned to do that our parents taught us to do growing up, and that was live within your means and budget accordingly. But we didn't learn to deal with inflation, with this kind of inflation. Because you don't.
No, you don't.
And quite often, especially young families will be in a position where, okay, we got to go where the job is. We got to move to where, and that's going to be the big city, which means inflation is going to be even higher. This is why you're seeing such a migration, huge migration, to states like Florida, Texas, Arizona, and other states, because how do you deal with it? Well, you know, at some point, you know, I said, you know, for those who we've talked about it, for those who can afford to move, you move. But at some point, you can't afford to stay.
Yeah.
And that's where the migration is like, okay, I know that for me and my wife early on, we knew. If I'm going to be in radio, I'm going to have to work some other jobs too. I'm going to, you know, there are going to have to be some things. We're going to have to create our own opportunity. We can't do it in a small town. And so we knew we had to leave. And we did. And now it is, I think you could see where that accelerates even people that already live in a larger city. Look at it and say, yeah, but what am I paying in taxes? What am I paying in rent? Do I feel safe here? Is the crime on the rise? And all of these things, these are the realities of liberal policy This is no longer an abstract. These are real things. Defund the police. Oh, it sounds noble. See, we'll make sure that they no longer have that kind of authority. And then all of a sudden, the neighborhoods start going to dirt. All of a sudden, crime is on the rise. Violent crime. You don't feel safe in your own home. Those are the realities that people have to deal with. And the way to deal with them is to get up and move.
We'll continue on this narrative next. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, we, by the way, that article yesterday that I put out from Spiked is on my Twitter page at Gary Red Eye 1.
All right.
And it sort of is, you know, we've been talking about where we are as a society and a nation right now. And that was, I think, a brilliant article that was written. That talked about the thing and talked about the banks and talked about we're being sold an illusion. Mm-hmm. We're not making products anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we're selling virtue signaling as a capitalist product,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or attempting to sell it as a capitalist product. It's not a capitalist product, mm-hmm. but they're attempting to sell it in that fashion.
Right.
You know, through the venture capitalists and everything else. And as he wrote in his column yesterday, as we brought up to you, they're selling you bull soup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use soup for everything,
mm-hmm.
any word like that. But it's BS that we're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And when does the public finally say enough is enough? And so when you think about it, what inflation has caused, and then you think of COVID and people realizing how much government controlled their life. And now the results of that, the consequences of that, the inflation that we're seeing now and government wanting to censor and government telling you, you know, the things you see in the news, you can't have a gas stove anymore. It's going to cost a lot. Electricity prices are going up. Car prices are going to be going up. You may not be able to afford a car anymore. You can't afford a home anymore. And you're working, and you talked about young families. You're talking about people now that are not just working one job, but they're working a job and a half or two jobs to make ends meet. And inflation is still killing them, and all they see is a government making their life harder and actually causing the problems. When does the change happen? Democrats are holding on to one thing and one thing only right now. We believe we can hold on to our power because of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing else they have. They don't have one other issue out there right now. There's not one issue that favors the Democrats right now.
Right.
And that's where we are. And so the public will react eventually to it. When? How? Still to be seen.
It's funny that Chris Rock, of all people, made the comment, said to Democrats, are you guys stupid? Are you trying to get him reelected? Why would you indict him? Chris Rock. Wow. I'm pretty sure the Democrats saw that as a slap in the face.
Donald Trump is all they have. Tell me one issue that they have the public behind them on.
Mm.
When you don't mention Trump, when you mention that issue.
If you take away their game of this is racist, that's bigoted, this is, and then climate change, what do you have as a party?
Oh, let me throw that in, too, with young parents, kids sending their kids to school, not trusting what their school is going to be teaching their kids, critical race theory, the liberal transgender activist movement. Everything seems insane, and everything can seem insane to you if you're making money and you're saving money and you're able to reach your goals. You can sort of ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can't reach your goals because of inflation that was caused by the government – And then everything else in your life that comes from government is insane and controlling. When does the public finally say we've had enough?
Right.
On your smart speaker, say, play Red Eye Radio. And if you're really nice, she might. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So call this little segment that we've had since the top of the hour, you know, where we are right now. And so you see, because of inflation and the fact of on the issues, you know, where are we? The Democrats have nothing except Donald Trump. And whatever's remaining of their, it's racist or climate change, it's racist, I'll say it's the racist slash phobic climate change issues that nobody buys. Nobody really buys that anymore. You've lost the racism charge. That's gone.
Yeah.
That's been used up by Democrats. They've used it now. Oh, I don't know. Since I've been a talk show host 34 years, going on 34 years, they've used it, and it's not working anymore. You can't sell it. You did for a little bit, and I really think part of the problem was the big burn by Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
I think that was the thing. That was the beginning of the end for the Democrats being able to use racism, because they attempted to intimidate. They successfully intimidated corporations and sports leagues into it.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work. You know, then the phobic comes up. Well, I just saw Wyoming, the 19th state now, banned males from competing against biological males from competing against biological females. That pushback has started big time. You know, I saw another goalie in the NHL said he's not going to participate in, Pride Night, whatever. Well,
yeah, right.
If you're part of the liberal gay transgender movement in this country, it's your own fault. You should have never teamed up with the liberal transgender activist movement to promote misogyny and femophobia. And to deny women, you know, their opportunity, and to try to take that into a civil rights cause. But you look at that. But everything that's going on right now, and then you look at, all right, who represents that party that wholeheartedly believes in everything that we and most Americans believe are wrong? If you look at the polls based on the specific issues, you have Biden, Kamala Harris. Nobody's really paying attention to Schumer. And nobody even knows who Jeffries is yet. He may be out there saying stuff. Nobody's paying attention to him. And when he does, he's as radical as you can possibly be.
Yeah.
But you have Biden and you have Kamala Harris. The absolute, Dan Quayle was a genius. You know, because he's always viewed as one of the weaker vice presidents,
and yeah, yeah,
probably because of some of the faux pas that he made, potato, potato, whatever, potato with an O, potato with an E, and you know that got blown into, you know, way out of proportion. But with Kamala Harris, look, here's the thing: Democrats know that both Biden and Harris are useless. They know it.
Yeah.
They know they're completely and totally incompetent to run the country. Democrats know that. That's why 75% of Democrats don't want them to run. And think about it. Who else is out there? Remember, Newsom initially was said to be he's the guy, but then again, they realized, okay, we're selling California against the rest of the country. Do you wish to be? And that's a great debate to have. That's a wonderful debate.
Well, remember.
Do you want to be California, New York, Illinois, or Florida? And there's more. I mean, but I'm just, yeah. Florida and Texas. What do you want to be? And there's more besides Florida and Texas.
You had the former governor of New York. He was going to be the guy to step in if Biden couldn't make it to the finish line. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then everything fell out. And look, I don't know where the party is on Cuomo. Maybe they try and fold him back in. That would be a horrendous mistake after everything. But who's it going to be? Because one of the things that you look at with a Newsom is the failure of the whole rock star approach. Because with Newsom, first of all, I don't know that the far left really cares about the rock star thing anymore. Because he's just another white guy.
You know, that's a great point, looking at where we've come since 2008, where the Democrats have come since 2008.
Well, because at the end of it, at the end of a two-term presidency, many of them were saying, yeah, but Obama didn't really do anything for us. Because it's never enough. It doesn't matter what it is. But what they said was he really didn't get much done. And that's a problem. To the extent that Donald Trump won in 2016 and Hillary didn't. You know, when you look at that, think about that. The rock star thing is not that she was a rock star, but the rock star thing is ever. By any measure.
In my mind, I quickly tried to scan my mind for anybody, any rock singer that reminded me of Hillary.
Yeah.
I came up a blank.
Yep. Nope. And so then what do you look at? Well, it has to be somebody who can sell the agenda. Now, I do believe that some of them believe that Newsom would be better than Joe Biden in selling the far left agenda. But hell, I could fake it and be better than Joe Biden selling the far left agenda. But that's what they want. They want somebody who's radical. I think they look at Newsom and look at the, you know, the whole, you know, because that's his appeal is the rock star. You know, first of all, California. But then beyond that, somebody who could go out and, you know, he's the basically the Hollywood type of a candidate who can just wave and smile. Well, it has to be more than that. It has to be somebody who's radical. Not that he's not radical. He always has been. But they don't see him as radical anymore. I mean, they really don't. Who was it that... They said, what did they say? Somebody wasn't far left anymore. And we kind of laughed about it, saying, well, no, they're not far left enough for the far left agenda anymore. But tell me what name that we know and the Democratic Party really is. I dare say, even Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren still come off as old school based on the fact that the party has gone much further left. I'm not saying they're not far left. I know what you're saying. They don't want the old school approach. They don't want the same old people up there trying to sell it.
It'd be AOC or any other member of the squad.
Could be. But I don't know if their clock has run out. I'm not convinced that it hasn't. And so those are the things that you have to look at.
Well, what issue? Again, even the squad is going back to the old standbys.
Yeah.
It's still racism and climate change.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you insert somebody new in there, which is why I think they liked Newsom, because he looked the part.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to find somebody who look. They're trying to find an actor.
But also, we don't want a white male.
Right. Well, of course, yes. I mean, that would be the problem with a Newsom.
But you're right, though.
He would have to bypass Kamala Harris.
You can't do that. You can't make that move.
Well, here's the thing, too. This is a question. I'm not a Democrat, so I can't tell you. But do the Democrats feel burned because the turn happened when the Democrats realized that everybody was too radical to win the presidency, and then Biden in South Carolina, remember, was the chosen candidate at that point. Mm-hmm. And so, boom, he was in. Is there angst in the Democratic Party because that happened and Biden didn't prove himself out now as a horribly rated president right now, even by Democrats? Now they've actually moved the primaries to start in South Carolina, and they were blunt about it last week. Some Democrats were blunt about it.
Yeah.
They did it, and now they actually had some Democrats saying the only reason they moved to South Carolina to start was to protect Biden, and he's horrible. So you look at that, and I wonder how many Democrats are actually angry about that. But when you look at where we are today in this nation, you know, on the issues and what party, and this is what has been frustrating, because Eric and I, if you've been a long-time listener to the show, we've been saying this for, I don't know, the longest time. I don't know what the longest time is, though. Mm-hmm. Over a decade at least. Mm-hmm. That it's never been easier to promote conservative ideology. And now, more than ever, because now we're feeling the consequences of liberalism.
Yeah.
Even when we started saying that, you know, everything was still abstract. Well, if you vote for me, things will be better in the future. If you vote for me, things will be better in the future.
Yeah.
If you vote for me, I'll vote to raise the minimum wage. Well, no, if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to slow down the economy. Okay, that's all abstract for the future.
Right.
Debate back and forth.
Right.
Well, now we know. Now we know that spending, that the left said, no problem. And a couple of years ago, the right didn't focus on as much as they had over the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we now know inflation, the interest rates, the Fed manipulation of the dollar, everything, the manipulation of the mortgage market, everything that we see now today, every failure that we have, the bank failures, you name it, everything was caused by government.
Right.
Every major problem was caused by government. It wasn't a natural disaster. It wasn't because of some foreign country. It's because of us.
Yep.
And who we put into elective office.
Right. No, this didn't happen to us. We chose this.
Yep. You might not have, but the majority of the public did across the board. And it's not just about one election. If you think, well, the election was stolen and therefore everything would be perfect. No, it wouldn't be.
It makes me wonder if the party has decided, you know, the Democratic Party has decided that it's better to have a puppet in there where they can send their agenda up, you know, up the chain and have him do all the heavy lifting for them without them having to go through the process of trying to, you know, put a rock star in or anything else. We'll do everything from down here. You just have the. But the problem is the old Joe Biden would have fit that. The new Joe Biden can't turn around from a podium and tell you where he is. And there's their problem with that, if that theory does apply.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866 90 Red Eye. Joe Manchin upset again. Boy, Biden just isn't pleasing him anymore.
Oh
that's right. We have an election.
Oh, he's up for re-election in 24. Time to get angry.
Biden signs a legislation to declassify the coronavirus origins. He had to sign that.
Yeah.
He had no choice.
Yeah.
That was unanimous in the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
You had to. There's no way. You can't. Yep. I mean, there's you think. And by the way, add on to all the stuff we were told about COVID that people know was not true anymore. Mm-hmm. Is there any confidence that we have a competent government?
No.
And remember, the imagery of our competent government or our incompetent government is Biden and Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
The imagery fits the lack of substance. That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So we really have an interesting next year and a half ahead of us. We really, really do. To see where our country is headed.
It's bizarre. I don't know what's going to happen between now and this November, let alone now and next November. I can't imagine. I really don't even want to think about it. It's mind-numbing.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you for being here. Download our app today, and you can listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. Wyoming has become the 19th state to ban men from competing in women's sports. Men who identify as women will be barred from competing with women in high school sports in Wyoming under the new legislation. You know, every time this happens, now they reported it correctly. This was in Breitbart here. Biological men cannot compete against biological women. And we have talked about how the mainstream media, when this happens, says transgenders will not be able to compete in, you know, this state's athletic programs.
Right.
That's not correct.
They can compete.
Yeah.
In the gender category that matches their birth gender.
Yes. The governor did not sign the bill, did not veto the bill, and instead allowed it to pass without his signature. Republican governor.
Way to take a stance. What do you actually believe in?
Why?
What are you doing?
Why is any, you know how conservative Wyoming is?
Yeah.
How could any Republican not look at the liberal transgender activist movement and say, no, it stops now?
I don't know why that was a hard decision.
Yeah.
To where you're going to do nothing. You're going to sit down. Then get out.
Yeah.
That's not governing.
I mean, this is simple stuff. This isn't
really
complicated.
Is.
And if you can't look, as we have stated, whether it's racism, whether it's the critical race theory, or whether it's the liberal transgender activist movement, be on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
We've stated from the very beginning, the liberal transgender activist movement, if you've listened to us for, that's why we say liberal transgender activist movement.
Right.
Because it isn't anything phobic. It's simply about science, biology, and women's opportunities. And as we have stated, and that's why we've been on the attack, the misogyny of that movement, the femophobia of that movement is so blatant.
Yeah.
And so we're on the offense.
Mm-hmm.
As the meme that I've seen more over the last couple of months says, do whatever you want in your bedroom. Adults, do whatever you want. Leave the children out of it.
Yep.
When it comes to that portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the biology of it, the science of it, stop it. You can't win it. There's nothing phobic about it. It's about you, a biological male, wishing to compete against a woman, and sorry, doesn't cut it.
No.
Are you allowed to compete? Yes, you are, with your biological sex.
Yep.
And it's that simple. No hatred. Compassion for those in those transgenders out there that are having a terrible hard time with it. We know the suicide rate is monstrous. But the fact is, it isn't an option to say, lie about this. Ben Shapiro went through that one.
Mm-hmm.
Lie about it, because if you don't lie about the science, instead of getting people the proper mental health that they should be getting early on, which means parental involvement in it,
mm-hmm.
Which then, again, the parents are closest there at that age. You can get them whatever professional treatment they want, because we know the suicide rate is much greater in the transgender community. They claim it's because if they don't get acceptance, they commit suicide. That's bogus.
Well, what I'll say is that it warrants, certainly with children, it warrants a professional being involved in every step of the way.
Every step of the way, yes.
And the parents,
yes,
being involved,
yes,
every step of the, yeah, way. When that child becomes an adult, then that child or that adult can make a decision or whatever decisions they want to make. I would still encourage that be made with,
yeah,
the advice of healthcare and mental healthcare professionals.
Yeah, my point being bogus is the argument.
Right.
The argument that if you don't agree, then, because that is the one of the major defenses. If you don't agree, then that person will be so upset that you do not acknowledge and celebrate them that they will commit suicide. Well, professional help is needed at that point. You don't deny the truth. You get the person the help that they need.
If the concern is so great that we have to change science to accommodate it, then it's the wrong approach altogether. We're not addressing the real concern. And if you don't address the real concern, this will only become a greater problem, and others will suffer.
Yep.
And that shouldn't be the case for anybody involved.
But as we have stated, I mean, and racism for years, because the Democrats have been practicing identity politics for the longest time. In fact, the first victims of identity politics were conservative blacks.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that many times, that if you're black but you're a conservative, well, then you're an Uncle Tom. Mm-hmm. You betrayed your race. What kind of racism is that? A black person cannot have, a person with darker color skin cannot have an autonomous mind? That their mind, their character, their critical thinking, that if they don't think your way, they can't be critical thinking and autonomous in a way where they say, my skin color does not define what I think. And the Democrats say, yes, it is. And if you don't agree with that, then you aren't truly black. How racist and bigoted is that? And that came directly from the liberal black leadership in this country and the Democratic Party. Straight on. Identity politics across the board to critical race theory, and the portion of critical race theory that deems that all whites are culturally racist to the point where it's almost like being in their DNA, and they'll never get rid of it, and therefore society must be based on that. That's a load of horse soup.
And it is a it flies in the face of the civil rights era.
Yep.
And this idea that you must think a certain way because your skin color is this.
But if the governor
is the kind of bigotry and racism
right.
that this nation fought against.
But if the governor of Wyoming thinks you could be wishy-washy, I won't vote against it, I won't vote against it, I won't take sides on it, and therefore I'll be left alone. Where have you been over the last 30 years? It doesn't work that way with the left. And that's why we've said we are always on the offensive when it comes to, I will never be on the defensive on these issues. I will always be on the offense because they're the ones that are wrong. They're the ones that are bigoted. They're the ones that wish to deny women opportunity. They are the misogynists. And they are the bigoted racists. And we clearly present evidence, as we did, for example, when Biden and all the Democrats in the party, talking about the party, maybe not voters, but the Democratic Party was all behind the racist mindset that the Georgia election law was Jim Crow. And they all agreed with it. They lied to the American public in order to get people of different skin colors, skin color tone to hate each other. That's what white supremacist groups do. And you call them out on it. Because now, even though I did see that there's some debate now, some Democrats are actually saying, no, we need to have the Democratic National Convention in New York. Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah, do that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because the couple of weeks ago, it was like, well, we need to consider Atlanta. And nobody brought up the Georgia law
mm-hmm.
that they once said was Jim Crow. Move the Major League Baseball out of there. And tremendous number of small businesses, including minority small businesses, suffered because of it. They didn't care. As long as they could promote their lie to cause hatred, that's what the mainstream of the Democratic Party and the president, who was the leader in promoting that falsehood, that's what they're about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, over and over again, this is really their entire platform. This is what you're going to see next summer.
Yeah.
On full display, because tell me, what else do they put up there? Higher taxes, which includes corporations and the rich. Then, of course, ignore the border altogether. And then everything else is just bigotry and racism, and you must fight bigotry and racism and blah, 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 blah when they're the party. And, yeah, and climate change. And over again, the American people have paid the price.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a long time, a year and a half, and it's a long time for inflation to keep going up and up and up and up.
There's no reason for prices to come down, and if the Fed does what a lot of people believe the Fed is going to do this week in reaction to the bank failures, and they move a 0.25 instead of 0.50 on the interest rate hike, maybe they go zero. Maybe there's no hike.
Or they reverse it.
Don't think they'll reverse it, but zero would be
as
good as a reverse.
But I saw that on social media last week. Maybe it's time to start going the opposite direction. It's
yeah.
Like, yeah, do that.
I would love. Look, Elizabeth Warren has said it.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing the wrong thing. We need to be going in the opposite direction. Yeah. And she's also for bailing out all of the wealthy people that suffered from the bank failures.
Yep.
Tax them after you do it, though.
Tax their wealth.
Yes.
Tax their wealth that you gave them.
We'll give them money and then take 30% back.
866, sort of like the lottery. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. To determine a driver's compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA score, safety event data is recorded and compared against that of other drivers. Drivers are given a CSA score, but unlike motor carrier scores, driver scores are only visible to enforcement officers during an audit. However, drivers' most recent 5 years of crash data and 3 years of roadside inspection data is made available to potential employers via the pre-employment screening program. So it's a good idea for drivers to review their online PSP record from time to time. A request for data review can be submitted via data queues to have errors corrected or to have a non-preventable crash designation indicated for a crash. In the event a current or previous carrier is audited, records on drivers with high CSA scores will be targeted first, but individual drivers are not subject to CSA interventions like motor carriers. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Remember Joe Kennedy? He was that high school coach that was fired for praying after a game. Remember that?
Right.
After a game, he started it out by he would just walk out into the field and say a prayer by himself. You know, he just would sit there and bow and say a prayer. And then, organically, other students, you know, students would come up as other players and join him. It was never required to do that. Well, as you remember, he was fired for that. The Supreme Court ruled, though, in his favor, said nope. We had said it back then that the Supreme Court would say no, this is protected.
Yeah,
and it is.
Right.
It is protected how we did it. It says Joe Kennedy, the high school football coach fired for praying after games, has reached a $2 million settlement with the school board and will be reinstated as a coach.
Mm.
Wow.
Good.
The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in Kennedy's favor in August of 2022, with the justices ruling that the First Amendment protected his right to pray on the field. The court later ruled in October of 2022 that the Bremerton School District in Washington, D.C. must hire him back by March of 2023. In a statement on its website dated March 6, Bremerton High School said that he would be an assistant coach for the 2023 season. Mr. Kennedy will be an assistant football coach for the 2023 season. Mr. Kennedy has completed human resources paperwork, and we are awaiting the results of his fingerprints and background check.
His background check.
We need to detain him in some.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something DeSantis would use, say. Yeah. Huh? And I'm talking about him taking the shot at Trump yesterday. Mr. Kennedy will need to complete all training required by the school district.
Okay. Slow in the roll.
The district said it reached an agreement on Kennedy's attorney fees for $1,775,000, which the school board must approve. As with any other assistant coach, Mr. Kennedy will be included in coaching staff communication and meetings, spring football practice, and other off-season football activities.
Hmm.
We are thrilled that Bremerton and Coach Kennedy are back together, and we hope that they go undefeated, said the executive general counsel at First Liberty Institute, the legal organization representing Kennedy, told the Seattle Times.
Yeah.
Kennedy began praying on the 50-yard line alone after the end of games until several students started joining him, which morphed into him giving a short inspirational talks in which he cited God and religion. When the school district learned of this practice, they asked him to stop and eventually fired him in 2015. Did he collect back pay?
I don't know if that applies or not. I would think if they have to reinstate him.
Because it's $1,775,000 went to the attorney's fees, the rest would be his, which would be...
That could be, that's maybe that's back pay.
Yeah, it's like $275,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that back pay for that time?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Because he would have a suit to get back pay. I thought the Liberty Institute did that stuff pro bono, though.
I don't know. Yeah. But it's good to see that all of that has been taken to the highest court, and it's been decided in his favor, and that's a positive. That's a good thing, because it was not requiring any student to do that.
No.
He was never requiring.
No.
But the left could not. They were losing their ever-loving minds.
Yeah, because Kennedy was the problem.
Yeah, because students wanted to go pray with him.
Right.
That was strictly voluntary. And I'm glad he won the case.
Hours a night and still not enough. Listen to our podcast available on the app and on our website, redeyeradioshow.com.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. We touched on this yesterday, but didn't get into the details of it. And I saw some of the video from Bill Maher last Friday talking about that, and he brought it up more than once on the show about how Democrats are insane. Because of the, Democrats in California, because of the whole reparations movement. But this story came out. Newsom under pressure to take executive action on reparations if the California legislature doesn't act. If you want to see what is going to become one of the most beautiful liberal circular firing squads of all time, what's going on in California will be the best. Because no matter what happens, there's going to be a huge liberal circular firing squad. It doesn't matter which direction they go.
No, it doesn't.
So Gavin Newsom now is facing increased pressure. Remember, he's the one that created the reparations board.
Yeah.
Is facing increased pressure to use his authority to unilaterally enact proposals that would dole out billions of dollars in reparations to black residents as a way to make amends for slavery if the state legislature doesn't act. The California Reparations Task Force, which was created by the state legislature in 2020, is considering a proposal to give just under $360,000 per person to approximately 1.8 million black Californians who had an ancestor enslaved in the United States, putting the total cost of the program at about $640 billion. The task force final recommendation for reparations will be submitted to the California legislature, which then will decide whether to implement the measure and send them to Newsom's desk to be signed into law. According to an expert and leading reparations activist, as if there's experts in reparations. However, Newsom, a Democrat, should be prepared to use his own power to enact such measures for the state's black residents if legislation doesn't. The task force is doing the grunt work of preparing the final recommendation, but at the end of the day, these recommendations are non-binding and still require the uncompromising political will to enact remedies that will begin to address centuries of compounded harm, said Dryson Heath, the activist and expert on reparations. I just love it. Experts on reparations. Mm-hmm. Free money. I'm an expert.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Newsom has the authority to act. If they are in fact aligned with the entire descendant of the community's wishes following the issuance of the final report on July 1st, and should do so if state lawmakers fail to act. Let me see here, social justice groups and some Democrats in Congress have been pushing President Biden for months to establish a National Reparations Commission by executive order. The White House has indicated Biden, who's largely been quiet on the issue, supports stunning the potential reparations for black Americans, but has stopped short of saying he'd back a bill introduced in Congress that would create such a commission. With the public 70-30 against, yes.
Hmm.
As for California, the process is well underway. Economists and scholars consulting with the task force came to the latest proposal by using a model that evaluated California's racial wealth gap, calculating damages related to injustices such as housing discrimination, mass incarceration, and health harms. It's unclear how California would pay for such an extensive project. Newsom, who signed the bill creating the task force and appointed most of its members, as when I said created the task force, that's what I meant. He signed it and appointed most of the members, announced in January that the state faces a projected deficit of $22.5 billion for the coming fiscal year. That's now been up to $30 billion because, oops, we didn't get the tax revenue we thought we were going to get.
Oh, darn.
To make matters worse, the California Legislative Analyst Office, a government agency that analyzes the budget for the state legislature, estimated in a report that Newsom's forecast undershot the mark by about $7 billion, which would make it, you know, $30 billion, thanks to about $10 billion less in tax revenues than expected. Newsom's office did not respond to a request for a comment on this story.
Yeah.
And then they wrote, for this is from last week, on Tuesday, San Francisco Board of Supervisors expressed unanimous support for the draft plan of more than 100 reparations recommended for the city, including a proposal to dole out $5 million each to each qualifying black residents. The proposal of $5 million lump sum payments would cost non-black families in the city at least $600,000, according to the Stanford University's Hoover Institute. The city board also expressed interest in other forms of reparations.
Hmm.
Roughly 50,000 black residents, such as a guaranteed income of at least $97,000 for 250 years and a home in the area for just $1 a family. Other ideas under consideration, a comprehensive debt forgiveness program that would clear all personal, educational, and credit card debt. Like California, San Francisco is also facing a massive deficit, estimated at $728 million, making it unclear how the city would pay for such a reparations plan. The problem is, now that they've come to a figure and agreed to the figure unanimously,
yeah,
they can't pay. They can't come up and say, well, we can only pay $1 million. They can't come up and say $50,000.
You have to go the full measure.
And then if they do pass it, if they do pass it, that's the end of San Francisco.
No, it is.
It's the end.
It is. There's no way to pay for it.
We're talking about anywhere with everything that they've added on between probably $250 to $300 billion for San Francisco. And their yearly budget is what, $14 billion, is it?
14. I thought it was
17 or 14.
12.
Okay.
Maybe it's
like
14.
That. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's
$14 billion. So,
yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, go for it. Because, you know, where are they going to get the money from? They'd have to put taxes on companies. What would the tax be?
Well, they would have to be immediate, massive taxes.
Yeah. And this is an extension of climate change and the delusion of climate change, because it's like, okay, we can run the entire economy on solar and wind. No, you can't.
Right.
We don't need to worry about the money. Just tax the rich.
Just do it.
Just do it. And we think they should, because we believe that unlike the Democrats in Congress that claim they believe in home rule.
Mm-hmm.
See, Biden signed that D.C. bill yesterday.
Yeah.
Even though the Democrats claim they believe in home rule, but don't. We do believe in home rule, especially if you're already a sanctioned city or state.
Yeah.
There is no home rule if you don't have home rule.
Well, you know, but, yeah.
But we believe in federalism, mm-hmm. and we believe in the experiments that states should do. And go ahead, California, do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that they've got it to 360,000 for the state. By the way, is the state going to say, well, San Francisco doesn't get the 300,000? 360,000 because they're already doing their own? Or do you get that payment on top of it?
Oh, I don't know how you can exclude anyone at this point.
I mean, it's like I said, Bill Maher recognized a delusion. This is how insane Democrats are.
Well, look, in the abstract, what we should do is we should do these things, but it was always on the federal level. Something like this was always on the federal level. California thinks they're going to be the hero. Well, sorry, California, you can't be the hero because San Francisco's too busy being the hero ahead of you. Now you have to pay for it. And how do you back down? Gary, how do you not go through with it?
I don't know what you do now because there's going to be outrage, but here it is. This is that one activist that I mentioned before disagrees with both the San Francisco and California reparations plan because he believes there should be no limitations,
mm-hmm.
which would take it even to a higher amount.
Yeah.
And seriously, if you want to know what the delusional virtue signaling gets you to,
that's it.
That's these Democrats
this is it.
That say, let's do something that we all know is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
We'll all commit to doing something that is impossible. And so we're okay because we're the ones that came up and we all approved it. And if it can't be done and is struck down by the courts, we can say that we didn't only care, but yeah. we cared the most because we offered 100 reparations
right.
that would have bankrupted the city of San Francisco and put California well into bankruptcy
mm-hmm.
mode. And so we cared the most because we were willing to destroy our entire city to pay the reparations. I mean, I'm shaking my head here because I just can't get to the thought process. I can't imagine what it's like to have a liberal's brain and live in it for a day.
Well, I can't imagine what they do from here. How do you not go through with it? And also, how do you go through with it?
Oh, I don't know.
Because either you decide to do it or not. Like you said, you can't decide to do it at a lower rate. No!
Well, what I want to see is the polling now of people in California.
Yeah, right. I want to see the people... the polling of the people who are going to have to pay for it
right.
in San Francisco.
Right. Just not the people that will be recipients and have no bill. They would have to be excluded from the poll.
The non-recipients.
It's simply the non-recipients who have to pay the freight. Do a poll now in California where the Democrats overwhelmingly supported reparations, and now it's at their door.
And they have to pay for it.
With a cost amount.
Right.
I want to see what the polling numbers are.
Right.
And it would have to be, would you be willing, San Francisco,
600,000.
Would your family be willing to mortgage the rest of your life and have all expendable income outside of food and shelter taken from you?
How do you
to
stay?
Support reparations?
You can't afford to stay in San Francisco.
No, you can't.
It's over.
Yeah. They didn't act a reparations tax that would follow you across the United States, just like the wealth tax that they wish to create.
Yeah, good luck
in California.
With that.
Wow.
It's going to be empty because no companies would stay there.
No, they're gone.
The non-recipients wouldn't be able to stay there.
San Francisco's dead.
It's over.
They did this. But see, that shows you how much they care. We're willing to destroy our entire city to show how much we care.
We're willing to go out of existence just to demonstrate how much we care.
Now that's caring.
We care so much, we won't be here tomorrow. That's how much we care.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I shouldn't be doing this to my mind, but I did it anyway during the break.
All right, I don't
have an answer yet, but I'm going to the Treasury Department of California. I'm trying to find out how long you can take a bond out for, a municipal bond, because you would have to do this. There's no way. You'd have to take out bonds. San Francisco would have to take out anywhere between a $250 to $300 billion bond.
Yeah.
And number one, who's going to invest in that? How long will it be? And what would the interest rate be demanded from California from any investors for 270, I'll say 275, we'll cut it in the middle, for $275 billion in bonds, municipal bonds for just the city of San Francisco to pay the reparations. And so I'm thinking, okay, how much would they have to pay every year on it? What would the interest be? And would any investor, would it be junk? Would that be a junk status municipal bond? Would we have a new form of junk bonds?
I don't know how you make this work.
No, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
There's no level of math to make this work.
No, there isn't.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith teaches on the sliding scale.
Those Weekend Golf Guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.